Hello, everybody. Welcome. I'm sorry I'm a few minutes late. It's been one of those days. But I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to see so many of you on this call. It's been a while since we've all connected, and we're here today for 2.5 hours. We get to be together for 2.5 hours. All about online facilitation. So this is a bonus to Curriculum Lab. And what we're going to be doing today is really bringing together all of the ideas and the skills that we looked at in the lab in an experiential way for you. My intention is to be able to show you how you can push the envelope of teaching in an online format to make it as deep as possible, as meaningful as possible, as transformative as possible. Now, of course, you know, it goes without mentioning that online facilitation is different than in-person facilitation. Of course, there's some crossover, and you'll learn today some tips and tools for in-person facilitation as well, no doubt. But really, you guys know I have a full year-long program that's devoted to in-person facilitation. It's called Into the Depths. Today we're going to be toe-dipping into online facilitation work. And the call is going to be divided into a couple of sections. So let me tell you a little bit how the call is going to work today. So we're going to spend about the first hour I'm going to be in teaching mode, if you will, in presentation mode. And I'm going to be sharing with you some important things to be thinking about in order to make your online groups as robust and powerful and successful as possible. So they're kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it, but I'm going to just be sharing with you a lot of different odds and ends around online programming that I've learned through the years from a lot of mistakes and trial and error. So for those of you that are really working on online groups, I'm going to be giving you lots of just different tips and ideas and things to think about. So we're going to be doing that for the first hour of our time together today. And then at around 2 p.m. Eastern, at the end of our first hour, we're going to switch gears a little bit. And what we're going to do then is move into some different space, move into what I like to call sacred space, and I'm going to lead you through an online experiential experience. We're gonna do an online ritual, and the purpose of the ritual and leading you through it is to really be able to demonstrate so many of the pieces that we've looked at in Curriculum Lab, to be able to model and demonstrate for you how you can use ritual online in effective ways, how you can go deep in online groups in effective ways, how you can lead different experiential exercises, and also to show you that pathway that we've been talking about, that hero or heroine's journey, and to see how things build on the next, how I develop questions, all of that. So I'll be leading you through, and you'll get to do inner work because we're going to do it on a really juicy topic. So that'll take about an hour, and I'll lead you through that ritual, that ceremony, that experience. And then we'll have time afterwards to really put our facilitator hats on and have a discussion about everything that I led you through and break it down from the curriculum standpoint and the facilitation standpoint. I find that one of the most effective ways to learn how to become a better facilitator is for me to model it for you to move through the experience and be in it and observe, and then for us to break it down. So, and then we'll probably have time just for any other odds and ends and any other questions that you have for me. So that's going to be the basic pathway of our day today. I wanted to just mention a couple of housekeeping pieces briefly. So I know that many of you are still working on your curricula. Yay! And if it's been, you know, it's been a little over a month since we've all connected, and if you've kind of just put it aside for the last month and it's gathered a little dust over the last couple of weeks, no worry. Use our container today as a reactivation for you. Just get right back into the saddle and move back into it step by step by step by step. So, you know, I know that many of you are still working on your curricula. If you have questions for me, I'm here to answer them. We may have a little bit of time at the end of our call today for that. You can continue to post in the Facebook group. The Facebook group will be open through the end of this week. So, you know, ask me questions. I'll get to all of your, you know, I'll get you whatever you ask me. So please do. And I'm happy to do that. And the other piece, that's it for now. So those are the housekeeping pieces and kind of how we're going to work today. So let's jump in to kind of looking at these, just, I don't know, like I said, the best way I'm calling it is important things to think about to make your online groups as robust and powerful and successful as possible. So these are kind of just different principles and different tips and tools that we didn't really touch on in Curriculum Lab. So first thing that's so important whenever you're leading an online group, and this is something you've heard me say before, but I want to break this down a little bit more and get a little bit deeper into it. You always want to set the container of the group and then bring your participants powerfully and securely into the container. So as we've already looked at in Curriculum Lab a little bit, this is really important. I think of any group, any online program, any in-person program, any one-on-one coaching, any place where you want any kind of learning or transformation to happen, I think of it as a container. It has to be held. And you as the facilitator and the structures that you put in place are holding that container. When people feel that they're part of a container, when your participants feel like they're in the container, that's when they can settle in. That's when they can be more vulnerable. That's when they can be more open to learning and shifting and transforming. I think of this a lot like if you think about a container of water, right? So think about a cup, for example. You've got the water, and let's say you want the water to shift and transform. Well, the way the water can shift and transform is it's being held by the container, it's being held by the cup, and then you can manipulate the cup, swirl it around, and the water inside shifts, grows, moves, transforms, right? So we want that container. Without that cup holding the water, what happens to it? It just spills out all over the place. You can't manipulate it. You can't guide it. You can't lead it. You can't transform it. So in practical terms, what does this mean? Well, there's a lot of different meanings or a lot of different ways to think about this. For those of you that are into the depths, we're going to go deep into this. But in terms of online courses, first of all, think back to steps 1 through 3. 3 of the journey that we've been looking at in Curriculum Lab, those steps are about setting that container so that your people can really step fully in. But there's more. There's a little bit more here besides steps 1 through 3 that I want to talk about. So I recently, this is a really good example, I recently joined an online group program as a participant. The program about PR and, you know, up-leveling the PR that you're getting and all of that. Anyway, I started the group. It's an online group. I signed up for it, and I got, you know, the confirmation that I was signed up. I never got any kind of welcome email, any kind of email describing, you know, what was going to be happening in the program, nothing like that. And the very next correspondence that I got as a participant in this program was a reminder that we were going to have a Q&A call in a couple of days. And did I want to sign up for a hot seat in the Q&A call? If I did, fill out a form and explain what my pitch was so that it could be critiqued. So I got this email, and I was thoroughly confused. Why was I thoroughly confused? Because the person running the program hadn't set any container. Number one, like I said, I never got a welcome email. And a welcome email should be clear. It should help people get excited, remind them why they're there, and give them the information that they need. Here's the schedule of calls. Here is what we're going to be doing on our calls. You know, like, I didn't get any of that, number one. Number two, I got this email saying there's a Q&A call, and do I want to step into the hot seat and, you know, ask about my pitches? But I never got any content, any curriculum that told me how to put a pitch together or how to put a storyline together. So I'm sitting there going, well, I'd like to, you know, be in a hot seat and ask a question, but I hadn't been given any context to step into this Q&A call. I don't do much PR right now. I don't even know how to make a PR pitch. There wasn't a container to make that first call really powerful. There wasn't a container to be able to step in. Nobody asked me what my intentions were. And also, nobody beforehand, and this could have been in the welcome email, set expectations for that first Q&A call. So, for example, I didn't know that not everybody was going to have an opportunity to ask a question. I didn't know that there were just a limited amount of hot seats in that call, right? And it's fine if there's a limited amount, but nobody said so beforehand. You know, the first call is tomorrow, and I'm like, I might show up, but I might not. I'm not sure. I don't feel fully part of this program. I don't feel as excited about it as when I signed up for it. I'm kind of questioning my decision to step into the program and make the investment that I made in it. I feel like it's a loose container. It feels just not organized, and I don't feel held by the facilitators. I don't know, you know, other parts of the container, like, can I email the facilitator? Is there going to be a Facebook group? If I can email, how often? You're like, none of this has been laid out. There's no container there. It's like you sign up for the program, and then just you don't have information, and you're running. So you always want to think about setting the container, and again, steps 1 through 3 of the journey that we looked at, those are all about container setting, and then some of these other pieces that I'm talking about, especially in online. When you're facilitating in-person groups, you've got a little more leeway, because as soon as someone walks into the room, they're in the container with you, right? And for those of you that will be with me in person in a few weeks, yay, for Into the Depths, we're going to be talking all about that, right? So you've got a little more leeway when it's in person, but when it's online, it's already by nature a looser container. People aren't going to be in the room with you. It's so easy for them to just get lost or not show up or not be as invested or present. You want to create that strong container. All right, let me pause here for a moment. Any questions on that piece? Star two. And I really recommend, you know, you each, when you started Curriculum Lab, you each received a welcome email from me. I highly recommend, you don't have to use the same exact, you know, way that I do it, but use it as a template for your online programs. All right, let's see who's this with their hand raised. 9929 are your last numbers.
Oh, am I muted?
I took you
That's
off
me.
Mute. Hi, who's that?
Okay. Hi, it's Laria.
Hi.
Hi. I am curious, what was there marketing that caused you to sign up for something that didn't then, like, did it not fulfill a promise in not having the container set once you paid? It's a common thing. You pay for something, and all the marketing up until the point when you pay for it, it's fabulous, and then it's as though nothing happened.
Exactly. No, and that's my point
Okay. Exactly
here, is that it can't just end when the marketing ends, and it can't you can't just expect to pick it up the first minute of the first call. You have to hold your participants in a container from the moment they sign up. They need these pieces. They need to feel held. They need the information. They need the context. They need to feel excited. You can have the best first call ever, but if there is a gap in holding the container between the marketing, the moment they sign up and the moment they show up for the first call, you've already lost your chances of having those people show up and feel invested and excited about the work that you're going to do together. That makes
sense.
It's
a brilliant point. Yeah, it is. It sort of seems like out there the business model is it stops at the sign up.
Right.
And it's really, I mean, it's obviously not the delivery piece, but it's a brilliant point. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for helping me articulate that more. I always say when you market a program or market anything, there's three phases of marketing. And this is a little bit like there's three phases of container holding too. So the first, you have to market to get somebody to register. Then you have to continue marketing and keep on keeping them invested and excited and feeling part of the movement and part of the flow from the moment they register until the moment the program starts. But then even then, in a way, you have to keep on marketing. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but I mean this in this container holding way, and this, you know, keeping them invested in the work that you're doing together, or else you're going to have a very high attrition rate. You'll have people asking for refunds, so on and so forth. All right. Next kind of principle or thing that I want you to be thinking about with your online groups is that no matter what the size of the group, no matter how many, whether it's two people in the group or 2,000 or more in the group, you always, 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 and this is a principle for facilitation, and this is a principle for coaching, and this is a principle for transformation, for all of it, no matter what the size of the group, you always want there to be a feeling of connection to you. And in most cases, some cases not, but to others in the group too. In person, there's always going to be connection to others. Certain types of group, there's always going to be connection to community, right? So sometimes if it's a massive group, it's harder to have that happen. But no matter what the size, you always want to have people feel connected. And in order to keep, right, this is part of holding the container, is feeling connected to you, to the work, to the content, to the results that they want to have, to each other. And when you are facilitating online groups, the how of people feeling connected and also feeling seen and heard, because you can make people feel seen and heard even if there's 2,000 people on the line. But how you're going to do it is dependent on how big the group is. And I want to just quickly, you know, we could literally spend a couple of hours on this piece. We won't. We're going to spend a couple of minutes. I want to quickly just go through from my experience what I've seen is like how you want to think about numbers of people and groups, because you don't want to treat a group of 8 people the same way you're going to treat a group of 200 people. Even if it's the same exact topic that you're presenting or the same results that you're working to yield, it's going to be handled differently based on how many people are there. And so I want to kind of just go through some categories that I've seen that I think will be helpful for you. So the first category is anywhere from 2, right, if it's one-on-one, then it's private coaching. So anywhere from 2 to about 6 or 8 people is kind of the first category. Now, if you've got a group that's 2 to 6 or 7 or 8 people, you know, any number in there, you don't want to think about it so much as a group program or a course or a workshop. Instead, within, you know, those numbers, what you really want to think about it as is group coaching. Group coaching is different than a group course, and it's different than a mastermind. And what group coaching is, the way it's different than a course, is that when you have more people, the course is going to be, you know, you have a set of curriculum that you're sharing with people, right, like we looked at in Curriculum Lab, and each week you're going to be, you know, sharing and teaching and facilitate that curriculum over an hour, 90 minutes, you know, whatever it is in your online format, and you may have sharing and Q&A calls and all of that, right? That's for more than 6 or more than 8. But if you have 4 people in a group, 6 people in a group, even up to 8, I want you to think about it not as that it's a group program, but it's almost like one-on-one coaching in a group. It gets a little bit harder with 7 or 8. We can even say the cutoff is around 6. If you get really skilled at this, you can go up to 7 or 8. So what does that mean? Well, what group coaching means is that there's less of a heavier set curriculum with a step-by-step-by-step-by-step and more of an opportunity to meet each person's personalized needs, right? You have that leeway when it's a much smaller group. And it's added value. You can charge more for it also because it's close to one-on-one coaching. So when I do group coaching, I'll just share with you the format of group coaching. And it's something that works so well. It's it's just so valuable for everybody involved. So let's say I have six people. I've decided I want to do group coaching, and I have six people. So the way it generally works is that on each call, first I'll have each person, there's enough time that each person in the group can share a celebration, just something that they're celebrating since we last connected, since we last spoke. I will spend 5, 6, 7 minutes teaching a piece of curriculum, but it's like a mini nugget. It's something that I know everybody in the group needs because I've been tracking them, and it's an important piece for them. And then we spend the bulk of the call, and the call might be 60 minutes, it might be 90 minutes, where each person has an opportunity to be laser coached for about, 12, 15 minutes, something like that. And the way that I'll work it is that each person will say what they want to receive, set their intention. I'll coach them for that time, and then I'll open up for a couple of minutes to hear other people in the group's reflections, and then we'll move on to the next person, the next. At the end of the call, I'll ask everybody to share their takeaways. Now, there are other components to this. Everybody always fills out an accountability form so that we can all be abreast of, where we are. Everybody can track each other. Sometimes we'll also set up some buddies in the group. But it's different. My main point here is when you have such a small group, you don't want to teach it the way you would, you don't want to lead it the way you would lead a really large group. You're missing out on the opportunities that a small group provides, which is really getting people's needs met. So that's up until anywhere. Let's just say, I know I said originally 8, but especially if you're not practiced, 6, because it's hard to learn how to be efficient with that. The next category that you, and by the way, it doesn't have to be that exact format that I was sharing with you. That's just one format for a small group, but I just want to get you thinking about the different ways that you lead different sizes of groups. The next group size that you want to be thinking about is the 6 to 24, 6 people to 24 people. And we can call that, it's almost like a mastermind size. So when you've got 6 to 24 people in a group, you're in this really sweet middle spot between that very intimate, almost like one-on-one coaching, right, that group coaching, and a bigger, larger program where it's more you're doing, you're teaching, you're leading, you're facilitating. And that's what I mean by sweet spot is you can still keep it super intimate, depending on how you set up your format and how you set up your sharing. So you can have that teaching element, and you'll have a curriculum running through it, but you want to also make sure that you capitalize on the smaller group and have lots of opportunities for interaction, for more individualized tracking, and for people to really feel seen and heard. So as an example, when you've got a group this size, on top of whatever your curriculum is, right, whatever your step-by-step methodology that you're teaching and leading people through is, you may, for example, want to work into every session that, in the very first session of, however long the program is going to be, you may want to not do as much teaching in that session, move through steps 1 through 3 that we learned in Curriculum Lab, and then spend the rest of that first call. Each person maybe will have 90 seconds or 2 minutes to introduce themselves, to state what their intentions for the program are, to share maybe what they want to bring to the program, that sort of thing. So whenever I have a group that size, 6 to 24, I'll always take the time to have an intro session, that first kickoff call. This is really about creating community. It's really about feeling seen and heard, feeling like you have an opportunity to speak, and feel like you're getting to know the other people in the group. Other things you can add in when you've got the size 6 to 24 to really capitalize on all of this is the beginning of each of your subsequent calls. You can, I mean, when it's getting to 24, it's you have to keep it short, like, you know, 3 words and under, but you can actually hear from everybody at the start of the call, you know, ask them what their intention is for the call that day, or what energy are they bringing to the call, or what's a celebration that they want to celebrate, right? And again, you have to keep it short, like a phrase or under, but again, it's a way for everybody to feel heard, to feel invested, to feel part of it. When you've got the 6 to 24 group, you actually want to teach less, actually have less content, believe it or not, than if the group is larger, and have more spaces for sharing and feedback and individualized coaching, like through the sharing. You want that when you've got bigger groups of over 24, for sure. But because those are bigger groups, you can't take as many questions each time you open for a share or coach as many people, right? So it's like you want to capitalize it, but you can't capitalize on it as much. But in that 6 to 24 person range, what I find really helps people connected, helps them go deeper, you know, is to actually teach a little less, have fewer exercises, a little less content, and more sharing time, integration time, question time. And then when you've got the 6 to 24 range, and this can be for under 6 too, you can consider also having different types of sessions in there. And I'll give you a couple of examples of what I mean. So I have one program called Advanced Sacred Depth. And it's the advanced, it's like the next version after you've done the Sacred Depths coach training. It's a very tightly held mentorship container to help individuals like go even deeper with their coaching skills and just become, you know, over the top stellar. And that program I limit to no more than 12 to 14 people, because I want it to have that feel, right? I don't want it, what I want to achieve there is different than something I would want to achieve with 40 people or 80 people or 200 people. And in that program, everybody's already gotten all the content they need, almost all the content they need from Sacred Depths. They've all been through Sacred Depths. So, you know, if they didn't have all that content, I may have content calls in that program, but what I would still have, which is what this program is it has different kinds of calls. So, for example, it has practicum calls, and what the practicum calls are, and I can only do this with a small group, is that each time we have a practicum call, two people sign up to be coaches and two people sign up to be clients. And we split the calls. We've got two sessions where essentially one person coaches a client for X amount of minutes. And then as a group, all of us break down the coaching that the individual did. I give a lot of feedback and tips and all of that, right? I couldn't do that in a group, a much bigger group, but I have the leeway to do that in a program like that. I'm really leveraging the amount of, you know, the amount of people that I have, and I can create a format like that. That's not all we do in that program, but that's one of the types of calls. Or for example, in another program that I ran for many, many, many years, it was also a smaller group. There are about 16 people, and there was a combination of things happening in that group. We had retreats, and they got some privates with me. But some of our group calls once a month, we had what I called sister circle calls. And those calls, I didn't teach anything on those calls. Those calls were a container for connection, a container for the women to feel seen and heard. And basically, you know, in that call, each woman would have a couple of minutes to share where she was at, what was going on for herself and her business, what's some struggles that she was having, and then a couple of minutes for the other women in the group to respond, to give her reflections, to offer ideas. I would always kind of do a little coaching in there too. So when you've got that 6 to 24 group, again, I want you to think of it, when I say mastermind, I know that's, you know, a popular term these days in the industry. It doesn't have to be mastermind, but the reason why I use it is because it's as much about the community and the interaction among the people in the community as it is for what they're learning from you. You can still have community and groups bigger than 24, 100%, but you're in that sweet spot there. Obviously, the 6 and under, there's tons of community. It's so intimate. But you can still have that intimate community feel based on the format that you set up for the program. Anything that's around 24 and over, well, actually, I'll break this down a little bit more. So the next kind of group you can think about is about 24 to 60. And when you've got 24 to 60, as well as 60 and over, you're going to be doing more teaching than the smaller groups. There's going to be a little less time in between when you're teaching, but I do recommend having Q&A time, 100%, either on the calls or intermittent in between calls. Definitely, you know, there are a lot of programs out there. Now, home studies are different, right? If it's not a home study and it's just classes, just class after class after class after class, but there's no opportunity to ask questions or interact with you, it almost may as well be a home study, right? The big difference between a home study and a bigger course, say anything over 24 or 30 people, something like that, is that there is opportunity to interact, even if it's limited. And so you want to really think about that. When I have groups that are over 24, I always, again, I like to have that Q&A time or add extra Q&A calls into the format. I like to intermittently, you guys saw me model this in Curriculum Lab, I like to ask for shares intermittently. I like to hear takeaways at the end of the call. I like to ask people to post their takeaways in the Facebook group as, you know, an opportunity for more interaction. If possible and you have the time for it, any group over 24, you may want to give the possibility to schedule additional private calls with you. if people need more support. So I'm a big believer, again, this is back to holding containers, and you can see where you land in this, and you may disagree with me. I'll just speak from my own experience. I think that there are too many programs out there, home studies not included in this, there are too many programs out there that just throw content at people but don't give them the opportunity to go deeper, to apply it, right, and to adapt it for themselves. Now, part of being able to do that is the quality of your curriculum. That's everything we looked at, you know, in July and beginning of August. But I do think there's something to be said about holding a little bit of a tighter container and giving people the opportunity to get support from you. And you guys have seen me, I hope, model this throughout Curriculum Lab. It's not just the curriculum that I'm sharing with you. It's not just the exercises. But it's you knowing that I'm here and I'm available, right, within reason, you know, or else you schedule a private, right, to help you with that. It's an important part of the container, I think, to help people be as successful as possible. The other thing that I do, which is slightly crazy, I will admit, but I still do it because it feels important to me, is if I've got a group of anywhere between 24 and 60, anything under 24, I'm really able to track each person in the group pretty closely because of all of the things I've already shared with you. I'm hearing from them every session. You know, I can keep my finger on the pulse of where they're at. Anything over 24-ish, I obviously can't keep my finger on everybody's pulse through the format of the program. So what I like to do, and again, this may sound crazy for you and too time or labor intensive, and if it is, don't do it, but I'll just offer it as a tip. I like to, if there are people that I haven't heard from, you know, I don't see them show up on the calls there, they haven't asked questions, or I haven't seen them in the Facebook group, I will intermittently just, you know, send them a private Facebook message or an email and just say, hey, wanted to check in. Is there anything you need help with? You know, what do you need from me? How are things going? You know, if you're on this call, you may have received one of those notes from me. Again, because for me, that connection piece, what I've just seen over and over again, is the connection helps people move forward. And then for any group 60 and over, you may not be able to do the individual outreach, right? That could get kind of crazy making. But you can still, you know, do a lot of these other things that I'm talking about, you know, and you're going to want to rely more on the Facebook group. In that case, or, you know, again, I really think I don't just add components into a program just because they're cool to add or it seems like then there's more. I add it if they're going to add value and help people achieve results and stay in the container and stay connected. So using a Facebook group is a great way to hold the container. And that's why, by the way, you know, some of you asked, like, can the Facebook group for Curriculum Lab be ongoing? You know, do we have to shut it down? And that's why my answer is yes, because you guys can even see just in the last month that we haven't had calls, there isn't that much going on in our Facebook group. It's like that container is no longer being held because we're not coming together regularly. So, as I said earlier, the more people that are in a group, it's like a law of nature, right? The more people that are in a group, the looser the container. This is true for in-person or online, and then the container is always looser online by law of nature. And there are pros and cons. Hopefully you've seen as I've broken this down that it doesn't mean smaller isn't necessarily better, and there are ways that you can still make it intimate and have it feel connected and have it feel held. The other thing that you just want to think about in terms of connection and holding the container for groups is, how are you tracking, right? So again, when you've got the 24 and under, you can just naturally track people way more easily because you're hearing from them in every session. Almost any group that's 24 and under, or many, I should say, that I have people fill out focus reports before each of our calls, you know, and I'll skim through. I may not, if it's 24, it's hard to read every single word, right, for every single person, but I will always look. I will always skim through. It's a great way to track takeaways, asking for people for takeaways at ends of calls, for them to share it on the call, for them to post it in the Facebook group. Great way to track. The more that you can track, the more held the container is. Having mid-program assessments, this is if it's a longer, you know, like probably anything shorter than 3 months, you're not going to do a mid-program assessment, but having mid-program assessments or having like a monthly, depending on whatever your content and your industry is, having something that they fill out monthly to help them hold some accountability and for you to track them can be really helpful. So, for example, in some of my looser container business building programs, I teach a strategy called blueprinting to really help you kind of know what you're doing, when, which marketing activities you're doing to keep it organized and not so overwhelmed. It's a particular method that I teach. And then every month, each person in the program fills out a blueprint and they share it. All right, so let me pause here. Any questions on just the different sizes of groups and you just thinking about how to keep connection and how it's really dependent on how many people are there, you know, how you're going to do it. Star two. Who is this? 0657.
It's Anne in Delaware.
Hey.
Hi. So one of the things as I'm listening and trying to kind of map the transition from in-person to virtual groups is I know that when I'm working with a group live, I rely a lot on observing people's facial expressions, body language, gestures, little sounds, and the one attempt that I made at doing something, you know, as a conference call, as a you know, like online kind of group thing, I felt completely adrift because I couldn't track the mm-hmm. energy of the group during the content delivery. And so I was wondering if you could speak to, you know, strategies for dealing with that, and I suspect one of them is pacing how often you're pausing to check in and ask people to share and ask questions.
Exactly.
And I have a concern that I'm going to ruin the pacing by stopping too frequently, mm-hmm. trying to manage that lack of kind of visual and immediate energetic feedback.
Yeah, I hear you. It's such a great question. So the first thing is, it is totally a bizarre, weird, uncomfortable, kind of scary transition when you transition into teaching online, and especially if it's audio only and you don't have those cues that you're talking about that you used mm-hmm. to, you know, that you have in person. So I just really want to normalize that for you. I remember the first few conference calls that I did, and I felt I was used to doing, you know, in person, not just workshops, but like ceremonies and rituals,
right.
And you know, and to go from that, I was leading a ritual online. It was like, oh my gosh, like, well, I don't even know what's happening here. So the first thing to know is, just like anything else, it's going to be weird at first, mm-hmm. and you will get used to it the more that you do it. There's that, you know, there's just that practice and that transition period. So I feel like it's important to just normalize that and state that. From there, exactly what you said, and that is one of the reasons why I do like to insert shares, because I want to make sure when I've got a ton of people on a call and I can't see them and I can't hear them, I want to make sure that people are with me. And I also want to pause for moments of integration, right? So how do you know when it's too much? I don't know if I'm going to give you a satisfactory answer to this, but I'll try. I pause and ask for share feedback at the end of kind of like sections, if you will. So it won't be after every thought, but it'll be at the end of a section of a
thought.
Makes sense. Right? And I will try, you know, I try not to do it. Like if there's two short sections and they're 5 minutes each, I'm going to wait till the end of both sections or three sections. Or you don't want to do it more than every, you know, 10, 15 minutes or so, because then it will be stopping too much. It's a little bit different in person. I want to emphasize in person is just a little bit different. So this is for online.
Sure.
I try not to go more than 30, 40 minutes without pausing and asking, unless I'm just giving a straight-up presentation for many hundreds of people, then I'll usually save it for the very end.
Okay. That makes sense to me. And I think having the disorientation and discomfort of changing formats normalized is helpful. Like, not that I'm doing something wrong, but that really does come with the territory. That's helpful. And then I think one of the things I'm used to being able to do in person is kind of scan the room and be like, okay, I can just go on. I don't need to say anything next. But it may just be that I, in the beginning, might need to do quick check-ins more frequently until I get a sense of the flow of what people need and how much longer I can push that. You know, like, are they ready for more? Or do they need to stop for something? And so that's a helpful context.
I would experiment with that. And then just the other piece I'll slip in there is, you may or may not resonate with this, but notice your energy.
Yeah.
I really believe, and you know, I'm not woo, or I don't know, maybe I am, and I haven't accepted it. But like, I really believe in energy, and when I can really tune in, when I can put my fears aside, and just really be fully present, even if I have people on the line so far away from all over the world, I can feel when there is confusion and when there is not inside of me. And
yeah.
So I would just say be conscious of energy, too, when you're teaching.
I think how I'm parsing that for myself in the moment is I can probably trust my instincts more than I'm giving myself credit
yes.
for.
Yes.
And that there's less formula and more flow.
Exactly. Ding, ding, ding,
okay,
ding,
got
ding.
It.
Exactly.
Great, thanks.
You're welcome. Great. Chrissy.
Hey, Joanna.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to make sure I had my note right. Did you say to do the focus forms and the midterm assessments and the things that they're filling out for both the 24 to 60 and 60 plus? Or
you can. So none of this is required. And it depends on content too, right? Like what you're teaching. But for example,
yeah.
You know, like with your stuff, Chrissy, even if it's a larger group, it could be really helpful for them to fill out an accountability form every month. even if you don't read all of the pieces in it, for themselves to have that accountability. You know what I mean? So that they can stay current with their business activities and what they're doing, you know, all that stuff.
And you said before every call.
Right. If you have a call every week, I wouldn't do it. But if the calls are once or twice a month, it can be really helpful in the same way that it's helpful with one-on-one work.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good question. All right, a couple more pieces on this that I want to share with you. So the next is, and this is so important that most teachers, coaches, facilitators, they don't really think about this. And it took me years before I figured this out. I'm so happy I'm able to tell it to you so you don't have to go through this. It's such a biggie. Know the difference between learning and implementation, and when which is needed. Know the difference between learning and implementation, and when which one is needed. Now, I think both are needed in any kind of process. But there are some programs that are going to be more heavy on the learning, on the content. And then there are other programs that are going to be more heavy on the implementation. And that's going to depend on where the ideal client for that particular program is. So let me slow this down a little bit in case you guys aren't with me. So, you know, probably you are, but just to say, all the learning in the world, content in the world, that it's great, right? Like, yay for amazing content, and even for the great exercises that we do, you know, that we learned about how to do in Curriculum Lab, all of that. But that is different than taking that knowledge, taking that content, taking that awareness, taking those shifts, taking the soul stirring, you know, whatever it is that they receive through the learning, and implementing it to reach their goals. So in the business marketing industry, let's say, that's the difference between teaching someone how to put together a lead magnet and then holding a container for them to actually create the lead magnet, implement the lead magnet. In the health and wellness industry, that is the difference between giving someone all the content and tips and tools and inner work that they need in order to do a 7-day cleanse versus holding the container for them to actually do the cleanse. In the romantic relationships industry, that might be the difference between giving people all the tips and tools and content and inner work and shifts and confidence that they need to create an online dating profile versus holding a container for them to actually create the online profile. Now, again, you do not I want you to be aware of the difference between learning and implementation. You do not need to have a program that's heavy on implementation. It's up to you. What's important is that you know where your ideal client is at and what they need, and then you create or develop a format for the program to meet the needs. So in general, what I find is the way most people operate is it goes in cycles, right? They need content, and then they need implementation. They need learning, and then they need implementation. They need learning, and they need implementation. Sometimes those cycles can all be within the same program, or a couple of those cycles within the same program. Sometimes they're in different programs. Maybe there's a 12, maybe, you know, an example of it in different programs is maybe you have an initial 12-week program where you meet each week for 12 weeks and they get content. And then if they want to continue with you, it's a 6-month, it'll probably be smaller, right? A mastermind that's more about implementation and integration. You're not necessarily going to teach them so much more in that 6-month mastermind. You're going to be taking everything that you taught them in the 12 weeks and really holding space and giving more individualized attention for them to implement it. Or it could all be in the same program. Maybe it's a 6-month pro. You know that people off the bat need the implementation. You've still got those same 12 lessons, but it's integrated into 6 months, and there's implementation in between, right? So I want you to really be aware of those two things. And there are different, you know, again, like there's different ways you can handle it. Like a lot in my business, more business mastery-oriented programming, one of the things we'll add in there for implementation are get-it-done days. Oh, we've done that in Curriculum Lab too, right? I added it this time around. So it's like there's content, and then there's time just for getting things done, and the container is held there. The example that I gave you before of the Advanced Sacred Depths, there was less new content in that program, but a lot of opportunity for implementation through the practicums. We have coaching clinic calls where people can bring their case studies about the clients they're working with, Q&A calls, like that sort of thing. That was a lot more about the implementation. I used to have a one-on-one program that was specifically called Integration and Implementation, and that was after people went through, you know, a 12-week group business mastery program with me. If they wanted to continue with one of my coaches, I didn't teach them any more new material, but they would have 6 months of implementing everything that they learned. So you want to know the difference between the two and decide based on what your ideal client needs and what the program is about, how much is going to be learning, how much is going to be implementation. The other thing I wanted to make sure that I mentioned for today, I mean, there's so many, you know, more places we can explore here, but I wanted to speak a little bit about continuing groups and rolling admission versus closed groups. So especially for those of you that go through my coach training, Sacred Depths coaching certification, you're going to see, and Into the Depths, the facilitation training, you're going to see that because your skills are so elevated and because you are doing such exquisite work with your clients, they're going to want to continue with you. You're going to come to the end of a program, and a lot of people are going to want to re-sign with you over and over and over again. And I've, you know, in my business, I have a ton of continuing groups, like full group programs, that I don't ever let the public know about. They just fill behind closed doors because it's continuing people. I highly recommend, especially if you're a person like me who one of your brilliances is creating long-lasting relationships, and you like to create relationships with clients and work with them over periods of time, you know, I recommend, you know, when you're ready to have groups that continue year to year to year. So it's not like first you're in this program and then you're in that program and then, you know, that's not the kind of continuing I mean, but I mean the kind of program that it's usually going to be in a mastermind form. So you could go up 24 or a little bit higher, where it's ongoing and people can re-sign each year if they like to. When you've got continuing programs like that, you don't need endless amount of content. Like a lot of people get scared and like, oh my gosh, I already like was with them for a year. I gave them all the content. You know what more? No, it's not. You don't have to be a content machine always pumping out new content. It's a little bit this difference of learning versus implementation. So that's one thing you want to think about. The other thing you want to think about is, I learned this in Montessori. So for a little bit, my older daughter, Panina, went to Montessori. We really drank the Montessori Kool-Aid and loved it. And I learned something really important through our experience with Montessori. So for those of you that know, when someone's in Montessori school, they're actually in the same classroom with the same teacher for 3 years. And not only are they in the same classroom and the same teacher for 3 years, they use in Montessori what's called works. I think of that as our content, like objects that the kids use and interact with and play with. Those are called works. So how they learn. And so you might say to yourself, what, like more than 1 year, same classroom, same work, same teacher, you know, like what is the purpose or the benefit of that? But it's actually brilliant. It's brilliant because what happens in Montessori is that, yes, the works are all the same, whether you're in the first grade, second grade, or third grade, but the works are designed so that each year when you come back to them and engage with them, they go deeper. They go deeper. So I want you to start thinking about your work in general in this way and your thought leadership in general in this way because it's important, but also it will help you set up for clients that continue to come back to you. So even with Curriculum Lab, that is not, you know, ongoing, continuing, there are always people that have taken lab before that register for it again. And it's not, it's a good thing. It's because the content is rich enough that each time the participant engages with it, they go deeper. They get to the deeper crags of it, the details of it. They understand it in a different way. All right. I think I'm going to pause here with these kind of pieces to know to make online groups robust, because I've thrown a lot of information out at you on it. Any questions before we move on from here? Priscilla.
Hi, Joanna. Thank you. So my question actually pertains to a curriculum that is let's say, virtually taught, so that's kind of pre-recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Any suggestions in terms of flow, length of a teaching module? You know, in my case, it's about leadership and archetypes and understanding yourself through those four pillars. Because I guess, like, I forget the lady that was talking earlier about you know, keeping people engaged, you know, when you're kind of talking into a video or recording and, you know, just keeping people engaged, you know. Do you have any best practices or suggestions in that sense in terms of if it becomes something that's pre-recorded and then has intermittent Q&A calls, for example? That's the best I can think of at this time.
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways. It's a great question. There's a couple of ways to do it or a couple of things to think about. So the first is you can think about it that anybody can register for the program, like, throughout the year, right? And how many calls did you say there were, or how many installs did you
say? At the moment, I'm thinking that there would probably be, so it would be an 8-week virtual course with two Q&A, two or three, I'm not sure, let me see.
Well, here's how I would think about it, this may help. At any point, someone can sign up, and they would get those 8 trainings on DRIP. And it may be that they get the trainings once a week, right, like every Monday, or it may be that they get the trainings every other week. You can determine based on how much your content you're giving them. So again, this is just one way you can do it. So they would, let's say they get the DRIP. Let's say it's once a week, and they're getting a recording every week. You can have year round, that twice a month you're holding a Q&A call. Let's say every other Thursday you're holding a Q&A call, and no matter where anyone is in their 8-week DRIP or their 8-week cycle, they have the opportunity to hop on to a call, connect with you, ask questions, get coaching, be held in that way. And then you can also have a Facebook group that people, that they're in for the course of the 8 weeks, or if you don't want to take them out at the end, they could stay in. Or you could also do it that it's like an 8-week trip, but they get 4 months of the Q&A call twice a month, if that feels like a container that would be helpful for them, right? So again, that's why it's important to think about the difference between learning and implementation, all the things that I'm sharing today. So that's one way to do it, so that you don't have to always have a start date and an end date, and are they getting 3 calls or 2? It's just kind of happening year-round, and people, as they step in, they're receiving it. If you worry about there are certain times of year that there would be more people on the Q&A calls and less people on the Q&A calls, you can always also just bonus those Q&A calls to your private clients, too, as added value, and so that it's like worth your time and, all of that. So I highly recommend a format like that because, it's a little bit of a tighter container. Then it makes it not totally a home study, and it gives people an opportunity to interact with you more. And it generally works very well business model-wise, because the more someone is going to interact with you, even if it's a lower-priced program, like one that would be more of this like home study, the more they are going to want to continue working with you when they're done. If a format like that does not feel great for you, then in order to keep people more engaged, I recommend keeping the trainings shorter, the recordings shorter. So, like, let's say they're 60-minute recordings. If you have the Q&A calls, you may want to split them into actually 16 30-minute calls, because when there's less of a container, people just have less of a attention span. So you may want to think about doing that. As well as doing it video or audio. Sometimes that can help people stay engaged. Mm-hmm. And then I would still have the Facebook group there, too, mm-hmm. For people to be able to interact with you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, that really answered a core issue, which was the scheduling for the Q&A calls, which I thought was going to be a nightmare, you know, depending on when people come and when they go or, you know, come, enter. So this way, having a set, people can hop on as they like. And I also like the idea of giving them extended time for implementation because it will take longer and I can hold people for an extended period of time. I guess I'd have to monitor, you know, in terms of those 4 months, you know, to make sure that at that point, you know, what, you know, they'll do something about it or stay longer or up level. But yeah, that really solves the problem. And I love, so when you talk about the length of the classes being shorter and the video and the audio, do you recommend giving people an option that they could do? Because on Zoom, you can do that, right? If you do
And so that way, like, I'm never gonna watch, me personally, I'm not gonna watch a video. I'm gonna like listen while I'm exercising or something like that, right? So yeah, so that way people, just depending on how they learn best and their timing, because home studies then become like so much about timing and when they can listen, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then they just have the option of how they want to do it.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant, and I think that solves lots of problems for me. So thank you. That's really lovely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. Okay. So now is the moment in the call where we're going to shift gears, and we're going to move into some sacred space, some experiential space, some ceremony space. And so I'm going to invite you to shift gears. So if you're in front of your, that's really how you'll get the most out of this. So if you're in front of your computer, I invite you to step away from your computer. Bring a notebook and a pen with you, and the different things I asked you to bring to today's call that I would get away from your desk. If possible, don't bring your phone with you. Maybe turn the ringer off your phone just for the next hour. Maybe sit on the floor or find a comfortable place to sit and to really come into a different kind of space. So I'll just give you a few moments to get your notebook, your journal, get your stuff, and, you know, I'd really, if you can turn off the computer, great, go into a different room, again, leave your phone somewhere else. It's so rare these days that we give ourselves the gift of being fully present, and that we give ourselves the gift of tuning out technology to really connect with our souls and with our bodies. And I really want to hold that space for you right now and give you that opportunity and give you that gift. And I had asked for you to bring some things. We're going to use them, but if you don't have them, no worries. You'll adapt. I'll make suggestions for makeshift things. It's all good. So hopefully you have landed wherever you've landed. You've shifted gears a little bit. You're in a different space. Wherever you are, I invite you to close your eyes. We're going to have our eyes closed for a few moments. And feel your seat beneath you or feel your feet on the ground, either your bottom or your feet. And then notice the energy even underneath, all the way down to the earth. Notice Even if you're at the top floor of a building, all the way down, that the earth is there, grounding you, supporting you, always there for you. And wherever you're making connection with the ground beneath you or the seat beneath you, just note where your body is making connection. And allow some of your energy and your weight to shift downwards towards where you're making connection below. We spend way too much time with lots of energy in our head, cut off from the rest of our body. Let's see if you can invite some of that energy, some of that weight downwards a little bit. Right to where you're making that connection with your seat or the ground. And then from there, find your breath. Don't manipulate it. The breath doesn't have to look one way or another. This is just about finding it and being with it, being aware of it, being present to it. Inhaling and exhaling. As you inhale, open up. Take in life. Expand. And as you exhale, let go. Let go of what is not needed right now. Release. Hug inward. Inhaling, opening up, expanding, taking pleasure in the expansion. Exhaling and letting go and taking pleasure in the contraction. Inhaling, opening up and taking in exactly what you need. Breathing in life, breathing in space. Maybe you need space. Today, breathing in calm or confidence, just breathing in what you need. Exhaling and letting go of what you don't need. Taking a few more breaths, really using the breath to connect with yourself, to connect with your body, to connect with your inner wisdom, and to connect with this moment, right here, being in gratitude for the space, for the breath, for being alive. And together, we'll take one more deep breath in, and we'll exhale everything out with a sigh. So breathing in, and then out. And then if you brought a candle and matches with you, in a moment, we're going to light them. If not, know that I'm lighting my candle here for everyone. And with this flame, we honor and we remember our mother and her mother and her mother before. And all of the mothers and the grandmothers and the sisters and the aunties and the friends and the women. We honor and we remember the women who lit flames to feed their families. We honor and we remember the women who lit flames to warm their communities. We honor and we remember the women who lit flames to be able to remember their own fire and passion inside. We honor those women, and we ask that they help us hold space today. And if you haven't lit your candle, go ahead and light your candle in honor of those women or whatever is important to you to dedicate this sacred space to. So, this coming Friday evening at exactly 12:33 a.m. Eastern Time, the moon is going to be full in the sky. She will be there in her fullness, in her ripeness, glowing, bright, full of possibility, in her full glory, in just a few days from now. It was just 2 weeks before, just 2 weeks ago, that she was completely new in the sky, a sliver, a new idea, starting a new cycle. And in just 2 weeks, that's where she'll be again. The cycle revolves and revolves from new to full to new to full to new to full. And being that we are just a few days away from the full moon, which is such an auspicious moment, we're already in the energy. We're just about stepping into the energy, and this is a powerful moment to start preparing for the full moon. We're just at that moment, right before the full moon, where she is in the middle of her cycle, where she has been growing and growing over the last 2 weeks. And getting ready to be in her fullest expression, getting ready to shine her light the brightest for the month. The full moon is a sacred moment for clarity. With all of that brightness, it's a moment for clarity. Not all moments are moments for clarity, but the full moon is. It's a sacred moment for honoring and for releasing, right? Because after she's full, the next 2 weeks, she's going to wane and wane and get smaller and smaller until she's new again. So it's a beautiful moment to start releasing, to start cleaning house. For millennia, the moon has been revered, has been honored, has been held sacred. She's been a sacred reminder, whether we have our wombs or not, whether we're still menstruating or not, the moon has been a sacred reminder that we are daughters of the earth, that women have the magical ability to begin again each month, to grow and set intentions each month that grow into being, and that we also have the magical ability to release what no longer serves each and every month. For millennia, women gathered together to honor the moments of the moon, to come together as sister community, to put aside, like we are right now, the daily distractions of life, and to step into sacred space in order to honor the natural cycles that we mirror in our lives through the moon. In order to connect deeply with ourselves and our desires, in order to learn more about our true nature. The full moon is an auspicious moment every month to harness the power of the planets and to direct energy towards the goals and the desires that we're ready for. And this particular month, one of the themes of this full moon is all about Virgo energy, which I happen to love because I am a Virgo. So here's the opportunity that we have this month. Virgo is the sign of the Virgin, but not an actual virgin. What Virgo really stands for is she who is whole unto herself. She who is whole. She is whole unto herself. She who is unattached, free, unconstrained, self-sufficient, unowned by any other, she who is whole, complete, and grounded in herself. Virgo is about that beautiful thriving for wholeness. And Virgo is also, one of the things that motivates her is service. All of this is wonderful, however, because of all of this, it can sometimes lead to a trait that Virgo is often known for, which is perfectionism, and that doesn't really serve. Now, it's so easy to shrug off looking at perfectionism because if you're here, you are already self-aware and spiritually aware and connected, and I'm sure you've heard about, you know, the problems with perfectionism before. So it's easy to shrug it off because we feel like we already know it, we've already looked at it. But I really want to give us the opportunity right now to take a deeper look at perfectionism, because it's a really powerful energy, even if you've already done really good work with it. And no matter where you're at with your perfectionism, there is opportunity for you to shift it even more so that you can experience more self-compassion and compassion for others, so that you can experience more love, and also so that you can experience more effective results. Because perfectionism, or I should say the myth of perfectionism, there's no such thing as perfect except for the gods, right? So to be perfect is actually a myth. Perfectionism is oftentimes a big factor of what holds us back from creating the results that we want. We think it's the thing that gets us to our goals, but it's really oftentimes a big thing that holds us back, and that holds us back from having the compassion and love that we deserve for ourselves. When we slip into the myth of perfection, we slip into black and white thinking. Because when we are in that, under the spell of the myth of perfection, there's only two poles. There's only two things, perfection or failure. There's no other choices. It's black and white thinking. And, of course, I don't have to explain why this black and white thinking of perfection or failure is not productive and, in fact, can be very harmful. when we fall into the myth of perfection, we may find that we get really rigid. There's not enough flow. And for sure, when we're under the spell of the myth of perfection, we are not seeing ourselves as whole unto ourselves. Instead, we see that there is something very wrong. So these are the energies that we'll just be toe-dipping into today and that we'll be exploring. We're going to be exploring the places in your life where your perfectionism shows up, as well as where your true Virgo lies inside of you. Perfectionism is like a myth of Virgo, that deeper wholeness and ability to get things done, because it's a very earthy sign that can be very productive. That's what true Virgo is. So we're going to be looking at all of that so that you can step more into the whole version of yourself, into the part of you that's complete and grounded and so very competent. And so to start us off with all of that, I want to ask you a question, and I'll give you about a minute to journal on it. What's the difference for you between wholeness and perfection? What's the difference between wholeness and perfection? And take a moment and differentiate for yourself between the two. What is wholeness? What is perfection? What's the difference? What's the difference between wholeness and perfection? And based on whatever you're seeing as the answer there, and just whatever I already stirred up for you through introducing the topic, what I'd like for you to do is to get clear on an intention for yourself for today, for the work that we're going to do here today. So maybe it's about how you want to bring yourself forward or what you want to be aware of as we do the work or how you want to show up. Whatever it is, just write that down. What's your intention for our time together today? And whatever you wrote down, just take a moment and breathe it in. Breathe it in. And next thing I want to invite you to do before we step deeper into looking at perfectionism is to continue to bring yourself fully present. And the way I'd like to invite you to do that is to place a hand on your heart and to say your name and name also that you're here and you're present and you're open. The reason why this is so important is for millennia, women weren't allowed to name themselves. They were known by their father's name or their husband's name. And so this is a moment for for you to really bring yourself forward. So close your eyes, and I want you to say out loud, my name is, and I bring myself fully present to this work today. My name is, say your name, and I bring myself fully present to this work today. And by these acts and by these intentions, we name this space on this afternoon safe and sacred. May it be a safe space for us to explore our inner perfectionist. May it be a sacred space for us to transcend our perfectionist and find the wholeness of who we are. So let's take this a step deeper. I want to give you an opportunity to become more aware of your own perfectionism. So I've got some questions for you to journal on. First question is, in what areas of your life does perfectionism or black and white thinking show up? In what areas of your life does perfectionism or black and white thinking show up? And also, how does the perfectionism show up? So take a moment and jot down some answers to that. In what areas does it show up, and how does it show up? I'll give you a minute more on this one. Next question, what's the impact and the results of your perfectionism? And it may not be all negative, right? So I want you to consider the positive and the negative. What are the impacts and the results of your perfectionism, inner and outer? So what I mean by that is outer is, so do you end up achieving what you want to achieve? How or how not? And then inner is, how do you feel as a result of your perfectionism? So what are some of the results and impact? Take a moment with that. Next question, what does your inner perfectionist trick you into thinking? In other words, what beliefs does she hold that she tricks you into believing to? What does your inner perfectionist trick you into thinking? When you're under her spell, what is it, right, that you just believe so strongly that you might not otherwise believe? And And then last question for right now, in these areas that you, that perfectionism shows up, instead of striving for perfection, if you were to see yourself as whole in these areas, what would it look like? So instead of striving for perfection, let's say in your business, you were to strive for wholeness or see yourself as already whole, what would be different? Let's jot down a couple of thoughts on that one for now. All right, we still have a lot more work to do, but I want to pause here for a moment, and I'd love to hear from one or two of you what you're seeing so far. I'd love to hear a share or two. What are you seeing so far? What's coming through so far? That's important. Star two. Lucia.
Hi, Joanna. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Great. Hi. So for me, it's my business area most apparent where it shows up. And for me, the difference between perfectionism and wholeness lays in my ability to slow down and allow myself to learn and to grow instead of I have to be perfect right from the start.
Yeah.
And I don't expect this in any other area. Like when I pick up the guitar for the first time, I don't expect myself to be a perfect player.
Yes.
But starting to lead in circles, I expect myself to be the perfect, confident leader, always having the right words present.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Why is it important? Just that awareness that you just shared with us. Why is that important? How is that helpful for you? Just to see.
I don't beat myself up afterwards anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you can just see so clearly how you're thinking that you're a god in that area when you're human, right? You're an amazing human with amazing brilliances and abilities, but you can't try to be a god. It doesn't work. It will only cause pain.
Yeah, and I allow myself as well to slow down, to like take the time and not to rush, my thinking, not to rush the circle, but to like allow myself to breathe and ground.
Yeah.
And just wait for the next inspiration instead of like grasping for it or like being desperate for it.
Good, good. I'm so glad you're connecting in with all of that. Such important pieces. Good. Take another. One more share for now. Christine R. You there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this. Big aha, and just looking at the difference between wholeness and perfection, where wholeness is about feeding the feminine, it's the softness, the fluidity, the strength and integrity and self-compassion. And perfection is the energy of rigidity and restriction. It's harsh and it's self-harming and it's fear-based. And it shows up in my business and where I don't finish projects like my curriculum. And the impact and results of that is that one of the things that in the way that it serves me is it gives me continuous food for self-deprecation.
I just got chills.
Right? Which keeps me small, which equals keeps me safe. Means that I'm not moving forward with my business and I'm not serving who I'm meant to be serving. One of the things that I got was that perfectionism in keeping me from following through and
completing, like birthing into the physical, what's waiting to be expressed through me, keeps me from being burnt at the stake.
Oh, yeah. That's big. That's really big.
Oh, sorry. I just got emotional. So, yeah. It's old. It's old.
Yeah, so old, older than you in your bones. But I'm so glad that you can see this so clearly, right? Because it can allow you to have a different choice and to see how you're operating here from a different perspective. Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. Good.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Beautiful. So let's keep on going because we still have more work to do here. So I want to give us an opportunity to go even deeper to understand this energy of perfectionism in our lives. And so we're going to do a little visualization. And so I invite you to close your eyes, or if you're somewhere where you can't close your eyes, close the shades on your eyes, you know, just kind of go inwards. It's best to really close your eyes if you can. And take a couple of breaths. Inhale and exhale, really connect in with your body, reconnect in with your wisdom. Go inwards. And we're going to go to the wisest place inside of you, the place that holds the deepest wisdom. And we're going to get there by going in an elevator and going down 7 floors, down 7 floors to the deepest, wisest place inside of you. And so really be in your body as you watch the elevator doors open in front of you and step into the elevator. And watch as the elevator doors close and just take in the feeling in this elevator as you go to the wisest place inside of you, down to the 6th floor and the 5th floor, just to that place inside of you that knows, that has all the answers, going down to the 4th floor, the 3rd floor, just really being there. All with all 5 senses in that elevator down to this wise place inside of you, down to that 2nd floor, and finally you reach the 1st floor. You reach your destination, this wise place inside of you, this place that holds your inner wisdom. And the elevator doors open, and be in your body as you walk right out into this beautiful, sacred, deep, wise place inside of you. And look around and notice what this place looks like, this place of deep wisdom and inner knowing. Notice if you hear any sounds. Notice if it feels hot or cold. Really just take in your wise place with all 5 senses. And from here, I invite you to call forward in front of you in human form your inner perfectionist. So call forward in human form your inner perfectionist and take this one in. Notice how old this one is, your inner perfectionist. Notice how this one dresses, how your inner perfectionist wears their hair, if they're wearing jewelry. Notice how this one, how your inner perfectionist holds their body. Notice the expression on the face. Really take your inner perfectionism in visually and energetically. And if it feels okay, I invite you to take this one's hand in yours. Take hands with your inner perfectionist. Continue to look at this one. Connect through the hands and connect through the eyes. Connect deeply with your inner perfectionist. You may even just breathe in sync together so that you can really connect with this one. And I want you to ask your inner perfectionist, and you're going to ask your inner perfectionist some questions. You may hear the answers. You may see them. You may sense them. Whatever comes is exactly as it should. I want you to ask your inner perfectionist, what event or series of events brought you into my life? What event or series of events brought you into my life? And just take in whatever comes through. Continue to connect with your inner perfectionist through the hands and through the eyes, breathing deeply together. And ask your inner perfectionist why they're in your life. Why is this one in your life? What does it have to say about that? Ask, why are you here? Why are you in my life? Inhaling and exhaling and connecting even more deeply with your perfectionist. Ask this one, who are you modeled on? Who in my life are you modeled on? Who are you modeled on? And then asking your inner perfectionist, as you connect even more deeply, what are you most scared of? What are you most scared of? Just taking in what this one has to say. Taking in another deep breath, really connecting, continuing to connect with your perfectionist. And asking this one, from your highest wisdom, what is it that you want me to know? From your highest wisdom, perfectionist, what is it that you want me to know? And then finally, really seeing your perfectionist, really connecting with this one, and asking your perfectionist, how can I use you in a more compassionate and loving and effective way in my life? How can I use you in a way that's more compassionate and loving and effective? And then from there, thank your inner perfectionist for bringing themselves forward and present, for bringing their wisdom today. And then let your perfectionist fade into the distance for now and make your way directly back to the elevator and walk into the elevator and watch as the doors close and just come back to this very moment up the 7 flights. To the 2nd floor and the 3rd floor, just integrating as you go up all the information you've just been given. To the 4th floor, the 5th floor, the 6th and the 7th. And as you arrive at the 7th floor and the elevator doors open, take a nice big deep breath in and out. And then shake it out a little bit, shake your fingers and toes and your body, and open your eyes. And take a moment and just jot down anything that's important that came through in the visualization. And let's pause here for a moment. We still have more work to do on this, but I want to pause here, and I'd love to hear from one or two of you what's coming through, what came through in the visualization, what feels important, what are you seeing and learning? Star two. I feel like I should know this number, that your name isn't coming up. 9602.
Hey, it's Iris.
Hi, Iris.
Hey. I'm loving this, and the piece that stood out from this visualization is the thing that triggered it is my mom. Mm. And I could really feel, as I saw that, like it really was her intention to protect me and trying to be perfect and be like a good girl.
Mm.
So that was big.
Yeah.
And another big one is that, because my perfectionist was like this sorry little thing on the floor, totally unappreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And its biggest fear was not to be needed.
Mm.
And what I really love was the one, like the highest wisdom it gave was to use me as your teacher, to alert you to incompleteness. And I thought that was such a rephrase.
Yeah. I love it. So beautiful. It feels really important. So glad all that came through.
Mm.
Good.
Yeah, it gives me chills.
Yeah, me too. Good. I'll take one more share here. Ashley.
Hi.
Hi.
So my mother also modeled perfectionism to me, and my perfectionist self is very compelling in tricking me to believe that being a perfectionist in aesthetic areas would help me be more of an individual and stand out. mm-hmm. and shine and to be celebrated.
Yeah.
And it was most scared of being boring and ordinary and pedestrian.
Yeah.
And I think at first I had a hard time connecting wholeness and perfectionism, but what I'm realizing is that really what she wants me to do is acknowledge that I'm already special and that I don't need to be a perfectionist to stand out.
Yeah. That feels so important. That feels really big. And, you know, this may take you into some other territory, so I'm just going to mention it briefly and you can, you know, run with it if it feels like it resonates. I have a feeling that you might also probably have a lifelong pattern of pushing the part of you that's boring into shadow, the part of you that's pedestrian. Mm-hmm. Like, we all have that part of ourselves, too, that's just kind of pedestrian, and that you've kind of, like, hated on it and rejected it. But it probably holds an important purpose for you, and it might be interesting to make friends with that one and see how, when it's good for it to come out and how that one can serve you too. Just a little kind of intuitive.
Yeah, I like
I'd throw out.
I
for
really
you.
Like that, and I think part of that is also just that when you're shining or above, or it creates separateness. And
yeah.
lack of connection.
Oh, I just got chilled. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's something important there for you. Good. Good.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Awesome. So let's keep on going. So hopefully through the questions and the visualization, you're getting some awarenesses and some pieces are coming together for you, and you're seeing some things. Like I said, the full moon is such a beautiful and auspicious moment for releasing. And I want to give us an opportunity in this container, in this held space, to do some releasing. Now, here's what I've learned about releasing in ritual and in ceremony. Sometimes when we release, it's just, that's it. We released it and it's gone and it's done. That's always awesome. It's like once and done. What more often happens, which is so much more just real life, is that it takes some consistent and persistent intentional releasing to really move through the whole process of releasing. So I just share that with you because in a moment, we're going to move into a little ceremony for releasing, and it may be like a once and done, you release it and it's done, or it might be that you're kickstarting the release process through our ritual today. And both are very powerful. Whichever one it is, it's very powerful and very important and very much a sacred act. Now, we're going to be doing this through ritual, and if you haven't done ritual before, I really see ritual as sacred play. And what I mean by that is it's kind of like children who they play, and through the playing, through the acting, they play themselves into a new reality. They play themselves into growth. Right, and into new beings and new understandings and new parts of themselves. So this is a ritual is a way to take what's inside of us and that is not tangible and make it physical and tangible as a sign of playing ourselves into being. So based on everything that we've been through right now, I want you to identify something that you are ready to release. And I want to just give you a clue. It's going to be an uphill battle if you try to release your perfectionist. Because hopefully you're seeing a little bit that we need our perfectionist too. There are some good things about the perfectionist. What's much more helpful is to either release a belief, a fear, a habit, a pattern, and that's also more doable, right, than just saying my perfectionist is gone. I personally, as I've become better and better friends with my perfectionist, I've learned to really love her and use her for good, right? So take a moment and get clear for yourself, based on everything we've looked at today, what are you ready to release? What's really ripe for releasing? And whatever it is that you're ready to release, I invite you to write it down on a piece of paper. So you can rip a piece of paper, half a piece of paper, out of your notebook. And whatever you're ready to release, I invite you to write it down on that piece of paper. So what I've learned is before we can ever really release something, we need to honor it because it's held a purpose in our lives. It's served us. It's just that it's no longer useful to us moving forward. But up until now, we've held it onto it for a sacred reason. And so what I want to invite you to do is I want you to pretend like whatever you've written down on your piece of paper that you want to release, I want you to pretend like the paper is the thing that you're ready to release. Sacred play, right? So I want you to pick up the piece of paper and I want you to hold it in your hand. And I want you to first just feel the weight of this thing that you're ready to release. I know the paper isn't going to feel heavy, but feel the energetic weight that this thing has had on you, how it's pulling you down. How you're really, it's not meant for you anymore. Really feel that. And also, I want you to take a moment and honor the purpose that it has served up until now. Really just honor that. Maybe it's protected you, it's kept you safe, it's connected you to a parent, it's, you know, whatever it's done for you. Just honor it as you feel the weight of it. Bless it. Say thank you for the ways that it has served, knowing that you don't need it to serve in those ways anymore, that it's now hurting more than helping. And then as you're ready, I want you to hold on to this thing that you're ready to release, this paper, and walk to a bathroom if you can walk to a bathroom, or if not, to a garbage or outside the front, you know, whatever it is. And I'm going to give you a moment. I want you to intentionally release it, and the way you're going to release it is I want you to rip it up intentionally. Rip it. Each rip is going to be a release, and then into the toilet. Rip it. And release it into the toilet. Let this thing go. Just keep on ripping and let it go and shake it off and let it go. And after you've ripped the entire piece of paper and you've let it all go, just shake your body, shake it off even more. Just let this thing go. Release it. Set the intention to release this thing. Let it go. You can even say out loud, be gone. You've served me, but now I don't need you anymore. Let it go. And just a couple more, maybe flicks of your hands, wipe it off, and just notice how you feel in your body. Good. And so our last piece around this for today is now that we've released, we can set an intention with the fullness of the moon to shine, to have this intention shine. And so I think I asked you to bring a rock. If you have a rock with you, great. If not, you can do this with a piece, write it on a piece of paper. I want you to get clear on an intention that you want to set for yourself. moving forward. It might be like a detailed outer thing, like you know, you're from now on when you write your newsletter articles, you are going to be in your wholeness instead of your perfection, right? Or it might be an inner piece, it might have to do with exercise, right? Whatever it is, get clear based on all the work we've done today. What is an intention that you feel really ready to commit to? If you've got a rock, we're going to make the rock into this intention. If you don't have a rock, you can either write it down on a piece of paper or just find an object, like anything. It can be, you know, a penny, right, that you have, a piece of jewelry that you want to set the intention on, an article of clothing, whatever it is for you. You can write it on your forearm if you want. Right? There's so many different ways we can do this. So find a way for you to set the intention. If it's with the rock, I want you to hold the rock in your hand and really set the intention. Make this vow, this sacred promise to yourself, and let the rock be infused with this sacred promise. And if it feels right, as you make the sacred promise, you can even put one hand up in the air, like all the way, so that it connects with the incredible energy of the moon and the fullness of the moon, and channel that beautiful moon energy from the fullness of the moon down your hand, down to your shoulder, and into your other hand where you're holding the rock, so that this intention is just infused with all of that energy. Make that sacred promise. Make this mean something to you. And then take a nice deep breath to seal it in. And then the last piece is, I want you to say your intention out loud right now. You can start with the sentence with "I intend to," or "my sacred intention is," or "my sacred promise is," whatever it is. And, you know, say it out loud. Make it have meaning for you. Beautiful. And so whether it was a rock or a piece of jewelry or a piece of paper, I invite you to keep your intention close to you. And on Friday sometime, or Saturday, around that closest time to the full moon, to reactivate your intention again. And in so saying, the work of this circle is done. But really only just begun. May you return to your ordinary lives, extraordinary women. May you walk with the highest energies of the perfectionist in your heart, knowing that you can use her to love yourself more, to create more of what you want, and to be that true Virgo, the woman unto herself who is whole. And we'll seal it all in with a deep breath in. Yay! All right. And so that's our ceremony. That's our experiential for today. So we have a little time left, and I want to make really good use of it. I'm going to take the time that we have left, and you know, we'll break down what we did. I want you to put now your curriculum hat on and your online facilitator cap on, and, you know, we'll kind of just look a little bit at how that was done so that you can adapt it for your own work. Before we go there, I just want to take like 30 seconds to just remind, I know a lot of you have stepped into Sacred Depths and a coaching certification, and I'm so happy and so excited that you have. And I know a lot of you have been asking about it and have been thinking about it. I just wanted to throw that reminder out there that there is space and that you are, if you've done Curriculum Lab, you are perfectly positioned to step into the Sacred Depths coaching certification. Sacred Depths is not just about coaching skills, though you will get so many coaching skills. You will learn how to create deep transformation. And there is an entire business component that is part of Sacred Depths. We work on your business mastery in Sacred Depths as well. You have opportunity to ask me about marketing, to work on bringing in clients while you work on becoming incredible at what you do, which, of course, grows your business by leaps and bounds. And so if that's been on your mind and you've been wanting to talk about it, please reach out. Let's talk. Okay, so all that being said, first, I'll just kind of like ask the open question. So I won't ask an open question. Let me ask this first. Well, hold on. Let me think about this. No, I will ask the open question. So what it like with your facilitator's hat on, with your coach's hat on, with your curriculum hat on, what do you want to point out? What do you want to pull out of that ceremony? What did you notice? What did you learn from a less like the inner point of view, right, that you were in the experience, but from the facilitator curriculum coaching point of view? Let's just start there. So star two. What did you notice? Or what did you notice from Curriculum Lab that I used in there? Uh-oh, I just lost my internet, so I'm not going to see who raises their hands. Oh, no. Shoot. You guys, my internet just blue, like, is not coming up, and it won't let me see who is raising their hand. Oh, no. This happened earlier today, and it takes time. I think it's going to take too long for it to come back on. I have to restart the whole thing. I am so sorry. I want to hear your takeaways and your questions about the work we just did. I want to hear what you thought of it and all of that. Could you please post on Facebook while I reboot my computer? Like, don't just run off to your next thing. You had 6 more minutes reserved for our time together today. Can you take some moments to write down your takeaways and your questions? And please, like, I would love for everybody on this call, if you can, to post a takeaway, inner or outer, and any questions that you have for me, and I will get to all of them. Please, before you rush off to your next thing, I'm so, so sorry. I can't see if you're raising your hand or not, and I can't take you off mute. So it's a funny way for us to close, but I'll trust that that's how it's meant to be, that you're meant to, like, integrate even more deeply by taking the time to write it, to type it out, to share with everybody in the Facebook group, and I will get to it. I just want to say one more time before we close, like, my hand is on my heart right now. Thank you. Thank each one of you. I know some of you I'm going to be seeing in a few weeks in person for Into the Depths, and I can't wait. But whether I'm going to see you in person or whether I'll see you in Sacred Depths or not, it has been such an honor and such a privilege to hold space for you, not just today, but throughout Curriculum Lab. You have no idea how meaningful it is for me. I hope that you have received exactly what you've been meant to receive through this time together. And I am just sending so much love and gratitude and admiration. And I can't wait until we connect again. So all that being said, I'm going to let you guys off the phone, but not out of the container for 5 more minutes. Write some stuff down, post it on Facebook. And again, lots of love. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.